boats then came in from Torino via truck. So it was a gigantic effort of scheduling the timing. Mm-hmm. And we had an additional problem, which was that, generally speaking, at our shows, we had usually some personnel problems with the shops. Mm. And this was a good time for the shops, and particularly the shops in England, to make their points for the various grievances or advantages they wanted to secure at the time of a show. Mm-hmm. Now, I was fully aware of this, and I would always bake into my timing schedules an allowance for this kind of a disruption. So, although the disruptions occurred, they were anticipated that it would happen. Uh-huh. So it was a real effort. And I worked with the individual chiefs, and then I traveled between the studios every week. Mm. I was in Germany at least once to three times a week, every week, year round. And every other week I made a round robin trip to Germany, Italy, and back to England. And of course, I also spend time in England with the designers, just going over the various programs, mm-hmm. and the design detailing, and talking about the products as they were developing in all three locations. Mm-hmm. So it was a wonderful experience, and something that I'm sure the family will always cherish.
I can imagine. There, you've been somewhat modest about your accomplishments in Europe in terms of, of developing and accelerating some of the product line ideas. Could you detail, as you have elsewhere, what your original priorities were and how that was accomplished?
Well, that's a good question, and I'll try. What had happened here was Damon Woods had his unfortunate accident, and that spot was not filled for quite some months. And finally, when I arrived in England, John Andrews, who was chairman of Ford of Europe at the time, said, "Joe, you've just arrived in England, and we welcome you joining our group here, but this is our problem. We need a front end like last week for the Cortina, because it's been surveyed and it has come back as a disaster. And would you please get us a new front end for the Cortina real fast?" Mm-hmm. And so the first thing, of course, was to hurriedly design with Gil Spear and his group in England a new front end for the Cortina, and of course the new Taunus was also being launched at the time, the Taunus and the Cortina, and the Escort had problems with facelift problems at that time. Mm-hmm. And the it seems that all the car lines had some neglect as far as the scheduling and the final detailing. And a lot of it was due that the position of director of Ford of Europe wasn't filled in time. Mm-hmm. And so the car lines that were due to be introduced had problems in respect that a lot of the sheet metal detailing that had been going on and supposedly were approved should not have been approved. Mm-hmm. Because there were flaws in the dies and in the highlighting of the sheet metal. Mm-hmm. So we had to hurriedly change some of the surface detailing, mm-hmm. of these cars that were scheduled for introduction before too long to accommodate and correct some of the surfaces that were going in production, mm-hmm. because they weren't correct due to the highlight final detailing. And so that was another tremendous problem. And of course, then we also had other problems of hurriedly trying to assemble a new Granada.
Yes, I'd like to hear about
that. A new Granada theme.
Yes.
And the timing, again, was back on its schedule, and the design effort wasn't quite there, and we had missed a lot of time, so we had a lot to make up. So the Granada was re-churned and rescheduled, and we got that moving, and that was a top priority,
mm-hmm.
to get the Granada, which was the top car of Ford of Europe, mm-hmm. as the prestige car line.
Top of the line.
Top of the line car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, along with that, the truck end of the business in Ford of Europe also needed some attention, and so everything seemed to need a lot of attention in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was eventually buttoned down, and we managed to make all our schedules. It was a tremendous effort, but the designers in Ford of Europe were extremely capable, and we got things turned around and on target.
What about the console? Were you involved with that?
Oh, yes. Well, you see, the Granada console.
Ah.
This was the same car.
Mm.
The console was the English version,
mm-hmm.
and the Granada was the German version.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was intended to be that way, but the console also wound up then eventually in Germany. And how it wound up in Germany was that the Granada was the top of the line nomenclature,
mm-hmm.
and the console was the lower end of the line for the same car.
I see.
So that became a problem with the German end of the business and the German acceptance of the console in Germany. Because this was an English name.
Yes.
And it was a tremendous obstacle. Eventually, the console was dropped.
Mm-hmm.
The name console was dropped, and only the Granada name was used.
Was used. Uh-huh.
Right.
And was it still used in Germany also?
Yes, it was used in Germany as well.
That was a pretty much a long time favorite platform, was it not? It was used.
Yes, it was, and started out a little slowly, and then approximately the time I left Europe, it started to take off again,
mm-hmm.
and then the year that I had left, it turned out to be one of the best sellers,
mm-hmm.
in Ford of Europe.
Now, I think you glossed over a bit too quickly the Fiesta concept. What was the reason for the need for a new what came to be the new Fiesta?
Well, the need for the Fiesta was that Ford of Europe did not have a B car,
mm-hmm.
type car,
uh-huh.
in its lineup. It just wasn't competitive,
mm-hmm.
and Ford of Europe needed a B car type,
mm-hmm.
to compete with the Fiat.
What were your AMC cars at that time?
Well, they were Cortina and the Taunus, and of course the top of the line was the Granada.
Right. Good.
And then we also had, of course, the Escort,
mm-hmm.
which was just a notch above the Fiesta size,
mm-hmm.
but below the size of the Cortina and the Taunus.
Ah, okay.
And the Cortina and the Taunus were slightly smaller than the Granada,
mm-hmm.
which was the prestige end of the line.
Uh-huh. So the you needed it to plug the gap in the middle.
The Fiesta, the B car, was needed in Ford of Europe,
mm-hmm.
to compete head-on with the European B cars. It surveyed in the surveys prior to introduction much stronger than any of the current European B cars. And at introduction, it proved the same. It outsold all of the B cars in Europe when it finally was introduced after I had returned to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a tremendous success and was eventually exported to the United States. But again, the exchange system between the German D-mark and American dollar was a little difficult to accommodate. And finally, the Fiesta was relegated to European use primarily.
I was always disappointed to find that the American version of the Fiesta, or the export version,
mm-hmm.
the American export version was not as exciting as the one you developed.
No, it was. It was really the same sheet metal.
Was it really?
It was the identical sheet metal that was developed in Ford of Europe from the proposal from the Fiat designers.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned before, that this was the theme that was started with the design group from Fiat with Filippo Sapino,
mm-hmm.
and that group. And that model was given then to Ford of Europe to develop as a production version for the Fiesta. Now, we were also in competition in Europe at the time with a proposal, and Ford of U.S. Ford had given a proposal to Ford of Europe for this car, this B car size, and it was surveyed. Unfortunately, it did not come up as strongly in Europe as it had rung the bell in the States, because the European appetite and the European design acceptance to the design was different than the American design acceptance. So they really didn't accept the European proposal as well as the final Fiesta European version. Incidentally, the instrument panel on the Fiesta was a tremendous success, and I felt very good about that. That was an instrument panel that I had a lot to do with, and my chief at the time for the instrument panel, I believe, was an Englishman, and his last name escapes me now, but his first name is John, and he came to the United States and worked in the interiors as well.
The final note on the Fiesta, I'm interested in the fact that you had brought in a young man who you felt had international experience in design, and assigned him the task of developing the Ford of England end of the Fiesta concept.
No, what had happened here was that the Italian input to the prime management show, where all of the models were finally assembled for a final approval,
mm-hmm.
included a proposal from Torino submitted from the Ghia studio.
Mm-hmm.
This proposal was the nucleus and the start of the original Fiesta in Europe. And it was the pre-production effort from Torino that was sent to Ford of Europe, either in Germany or England, where we had our show at the time,
mm-hmm.
and we were directed in Ford of Europe to take that theme from Torino and productionize it and make it feasible for a production Fiesta.
Mm-hmm.
And the name Fiesta was not used at the time, but to make it feasible as a production car.
What was the code name?
And, well, it was just It was the Bobcat.
The Bobcat, right.
Of course. Right. Uh-huh. It was the Bobcat. Mm-hmm. And so we proceeded with the Bobcat proposal of that particular proposal, along with some other Ford of Europe proposals that were developed both in England and in Germany. Mm-hmm. So we were putting together several models, including developing into the production phase the pre-production effort submitted from Torino, mm-hmm. that finally turned out to be the final model that was finally named the Fiesta. But the original Fiesta proposal that we received from Italy was way under package. It was quite low, mm-hmm. and slinky, mm-hmm. and it had taken liberties with the package, mm-hmm. that neither Germany nor England nor the U.S. took. Mm-hmm. And of course, they had this liberty in Italy to do that. Uh-huh. They were a pre-production effort studio, and they felt that it possibly could be squeezed in that kind of a package. But the package that we had going for the Bobcat was a package developed in Ford of Europe and along with the U.S. engineers and refined in Ford of Europe. It was just could not accommodate the car that we received from Torino, so we were given the responsibility to take that Torino proposal and make it feasible, mm-hmm. so which we did. And my chief in Ford of England at the time was Jack Telnack,
whom you had recruited personally,
whom I personally recruited in the States, and I was very happy to get in Europe to help with the products. Mm-hmm. And I remember when the car was finally approved, I called Jack in my office, and he wasn't aware of the total operation of Ford of Europe at the time. And I explained to Jack, I said, Jack, this model that we finally developed in your studio, the English Italian contribution that the English developed, I said, now that it's approved, we're going to have to take this model and ship it to Germany and have Uwe Bahnsen and his crew do the final production detailing. Well, at that point, Jack, of course, not being familiar with all of the requirements of Ford of Europe and what we had to go through, was quite concerned. Mm-hmm. He felt that he could do the detailing right there in England, and I said, no, Jack, we can't. Mm-hmm. And I said, for two reasons we can't. One, you don't have the right tools. Germany has the best tools, mm-hmm. of the two areas, and he knew this. Mm-hmm. I said, they've got the latest electronic bridges, and they've got the best equipment, and they can detail it. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, Jack, I said, we have to get a German input into this car. And we have to be able to say that German engineering and German design effort was involved in the development of the Fiesta. Mm-hmm. So reluctantly, Jack finally saw the light. We did ship the model to England, but again, as an operational management group, mm-hmm. the way I functioned with it was that I had Jack Telnack go to Germany periodically with me or separately to dovetail with Uwe Bahnsen to make sure that as the model was developed, if there were changes, that Jack was aware where we were making the changes and for what reasons, for manufacturing or feasibility or cost, some of the changes were being put into the model. So Jack too was fully aware of the final detailing to the Fiesta that we had developed in England, finally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was our method of operation. So we may have developed a car in one country, but like in England, and but we invariably sent it to Germany for the final detailing.
And the Fiesta was an immediate sales success, critical and sales success.
Fiesta was an immediate sales success, and it was a tremendous effort by Ford Motor worldwide, U.S. and Europe combined, in respect that they had to put in new plant facilities and set up new production lines and new plants in Spain, buy the property in Spain, look for property in Spain, buy property in Spain, set it all up. And Jack McDougall did a tremendous job in, from what I understand, in correlating the Ford of Europe Fiesta plant and developing that plan for the production of the Fiesta car in Spain. And it was a tremendous effort, because the Spanish people had not had this kind of effort before, and they needed a car line like the Fiesta in Spain to help their economy. And of course Ford was happy to go to Spain, because it proved to be a economically a good place to have a plant. And it turned out that the Spanish people finally turned out the product with the same competency as the German manufacturing people did. So it was a tremendous effort, and the engineers and the management of integrating the manufacturing of this Fiesta car in Spain, training the people, the Spanish people, in Germany, and then sending them back to Spain so that they would do it the way the Germans did it. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the car being produced in Spain with the same qualities and standards of production as in the rest of Germany, it was a feat. Mm-hmm. I was not, of course, connected with that portion of the business at all. That was entirely Jack McDougall's world and the manufacturing and all that, but he did one tremendous job.
So the erstwhile Bobcat was now renamed the Fiesta and produced in Spain.
Right.
As the first product of that new assembly plant. There it is.
It was produced in Spain and also in Germany.
What's a city in Spain? Is that plant located?
Near Valencia, I believe.
Valencia, yes. Right. Mm-hmm. One final detail about Ford of Europe that interests me, that you've described elsewhere. The increasing feeling you had that you had duplicate facilities in Germany and England.
Yes. For the time I was in Europe, I felt that we were spending an abnormal amount of money with the two facilities primarily. I wasn't putting the Italian facility in, because that was just a very small single pre-production effort back in Torino with a very small group of people. But England had a full design section devoted to designing cars, very similar to the U.S. effort on a small scale, and a counterpart of that same effort going on in Germany. And with the cars being designed in both areas and the numbers of people that were required to staff the separate studios, one in England, one in Germany, and to keep these staffs going with engineers and modelers and designers, and the effort and the time that was spent shipping these models back and forth across Europe for our individual shows, and the cost of the facilities and the overhead, I thought was just a tremendous expenditure that would be far better and more economical, more efficient, to integrate the whole business in one design center. And my recommendation was to integrate it in Germany. And
For various reasons.
For those many reasons I just cited. Management also felt, yes, this was true. And they asked me to make a study and see what would be involved in having our design effort integrated into one design center. But finally, when all of the economics were evaluated on paper, and the timing involved, and the timing of the various programs that were in the hopper at the time, it was felt that it was too early to try that effort. And to my knowledge, it is still split.
Is it really?
As far as I know, with an English and a German section. Maybe someday, hopefully so, it'll be one design studio effort similar to the one in Dearborn, which I think should happen.
Where are they located geographically?
Well, the one in Germany, of course, is in Cologne.
Mm-hmm.
And the one in England is out in Dunton, which is just outside of the Brentwood area, and near Worley.
In Essex,
right. And they both have had, and I don't know the final detailing now, the makeup of the two organizations or of the separate functions, but when I had left Europe, they had both equal engineering efforts and design efforts, and they were duplicate counterparts in all respects. I thought that this was a tremendous expenditure of money
and a duplication
and of effort. And I felt that the budget could be helped by streamlining the personnel and getting the more qualified personnel in one building. It would have made the whole operation in Port of Europe that much easier. And it would have certainly been a lot easier for me because I had spent so much time traveling between the three sections, primarily between England and Germany. As I mentioned, I was in an airplane from 1 to 3 times a week, every week, year round. In fact, my passports had a visa and entry exit stamps in them till it wouldn't end. I had accordion pleated sections added to my passport. That was hilarious.
So the bifurcated effort continues. They have not closed down Denton.
To my knowledge, the two areas are still functioning in a separate fashion. I think they should be together, and I hope they do get together eventually. Now, if I may close, in total, after returning to the States a year and a half or so later, I had retired from Ford, and with my retirement, I feel that I've accomplished at least some of my starry-eyed hopes when I was in art school. Namely, number one was to be able to see products in a marketplace, industrial design products, that I may have been associated with. And soon after graduating from art school, I began to see such products, starting with my joining, of course, with George W. Walker's design group, industrial design products that I had been associated with through his office. And then, of course, very fortunately, a lot of design products from my first love, which has always been the automobile. And I have been associated with many cars in the development of the Ford line of cars from 1949 through 1974. And of course, with all of the European cars and trucks, and for 6 years. And I did realize some of my ambitious daydreamings, and some even more than I had realized, and also some that I didn't quite achieve because possibly they were difficult to get there. But generally I did achieve most of the things that I had daydreamed about after graduating from Cleveland School of Art in the industrial design section.
And the Fiesta was your triumph of the 70s?
The last car I worked with in Europe was, of course, the Fiesta.
If I were to ask you, and I've warned you that I would at the end of our interview, if you could sum up your design philosophy and the speed by which you've lived all of your professional life, could you do that for us at this moment, at this time?
Well, my design. First of all, I believe you've asked me what my design
philosophy
was, and what the credo was. I would assume that those would probably be two kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. Design philosophy primarily, I have always strived to investigate the product as to what the product's function would be, and to try to design for that product in the simplest possible way, designs that would accommodate that product in the marketplace without encumbering the product with superficiality. As much as possible, I tried to keep the lines as simple as possible and tried to keep the products generally on target to what they were intended to do in the marketplace. And also, George W. Walker instilled in me something I never forgotten, and something that he's always talked about, and that the final judge of all the products were the buying public. And George always said, and I never forgotten, is that if a customer has an opportunity to evaluate two products for the same function, the one that has the better design and the better aesthetics will always come out on top, will always outsell the other. So I've always tried for the best design for the product. I've never lost sight of that, never lost sight that if there are two products on the counter, the one with the best design effort will always be the winner. The credo of my operation has been that you can't do it all yourself, and it's good to give credit where credit is due and work with people, and always remember that they would like to be recognized for their effort on the products. And always remember to listen to other design input and other opinions to make sure that the products do have the best possible input for design consideration. I think I've done that through the years. I worked with a lot of designers, and we had a lot of communication from top to bottom and from the bottom up, and in fact I enforced it. And we never had anybody shy in the Ford studio for long, because we We dug them out of the shell and we made them talk. That was one of the requirements of being a designer in a Ford studio. You have to be able to communicate about the design that you were working on and whether you thought that product was going in the right direction or not. And be prepared, however, if you felt that it wasn't, to have an answer as how you would fix it or what would be needed to fix it. And there was always an open-end discussion, which was a healthy give and take.
Well, certainly the results that you've accomplished over the years has sort of vindicated that method.
Mm-hmm. And I feel rather successful also that, to my knowledge, I was the only person in the States or anywhere in Europe that had a studio like the Ford Exterior Design Studio effort for approximately 13 years officially. And of course, unofficially, as a consultant working for George W. Walker in the same capacity for a few more years, but officially for at least 13 years in consecutive years, and all of the products that were developed for the Ford division and the car line business, the Ford and the car lines and the trucks.
Just about 20 years.
Oh, yes, in total. It was about a 20-year experience.
You've agreed to give us an amusing, by the way, thank you very much for that delightful
You're welcome.
Recounting of your incredible design career. You've agreed to add an amusing and instructive postscript to the Mustang story. The your reaction to Lee Iacocca's description of the Mustang episode in his new book.
Oh yes, I read, of course, my first alert that the book might be coming out was my reading, of course, the Newsweek article
excerpt
quoted as an excerpt from Iacocca,
forthcoming book.
Mm-hmm. And having read that, I was considerably concerned that the credits on the Mustang mentioned both Dave Ash and myself, and I also felt that it shouldn't have been given that way, and I wrote Lee a letter and explaining that, first of all, the Mustang would not have been the Mustang that was finally bought had I not changed the first effort of the Mustang that was started in the Ford studio, because I had felt that it was going in the wrong direction. And it was then the second effort that I, after stopping the first effort, clay model, and having gathered our management group in the design studio and all our designers together and brainstormed the problem more thoroughly and given it more thought to the design and its concept, and having established that we proceeded then with the final detailing of the Mustang that was finally bought. And Lee was never aware that there had been a Mustang started in a period of time that I was in management training over several days and absent from the studio, and that the effort had rapidly been put together and for my inspection when I got back from the training. But having come back from this seminar, I immediately recognized that we were on the wrong track, so I stopped the model. Now, Lee had never known this.
Mm-hmm.
And further, I said, Lee,
at this point, you were writing him a letter.
Yes, I had written Lee this letter. I said, Lee, it should have said Joe Orris and his staff of designers, because there were really, by rights, several other competent designers in the studio that also contributed to the development of the Mustang. And yes, and I mentioned in the letter to Lee that I said a designer in the Ford studio that was a manager at the time, working for Dave Ash, who had been mentioned in the excerpt in the Newsweek, who was my exec in the Ford studio, but Gail Haldeman did a tremendous job in helping establish the theme with the Mustang. And of course, we also had in the Ford studio a John Foster, who did a excellent, outstanding job in contributing to the development of the Mustang. And then we had another very capable young designer, Charlie Faniff, who also contributed. And in addition to that, of course, you know, the interiors were also an effort under the guidance of the chief of interiors, Damon Woods, and John Najar, who was in interiors, I believe, at the time. But the exterior portion of the design was a team effort of the exterior design studio. And it should have said Joe Orse and his staff, to give credit, at least, to the other designers.
Did you mention Mr. Haldeman's immediate...
Oh yes, I mentioned that Gail Haldeman did a tremendous job in assisting to bring to fruition the final Mustang. But this final Mustang was really the model that I had, the original model that was intended to be a Mustang had been stopped, which I'd stopped, and it was only after we had reassessed the design direction with the designers in the studio and the design staff and established the new course for the Mustang that this new Mustang finally was established.
And you mentioned David Ash as well.
And of course, Dave Ash was my exec in the studio directly under me, who helped bird dog, you can say, the detailings, the many detailings, working with the engineers to make sure that the design was properly detailed in the, and we had met all the engineering requirements. And of course, many groups came through the studio, such as engineers and manufacturing personnel and the product planners and sales. And of course, then finally, Leon Koken and everybody else, product planners. And
they enthusiastically accepted the...
Everybody enthusiastically accepted the final Mustang, and after approval, this car did fall together very well, as I have previously said, and very little change was put to the car.
I think you also pointed out, and I think it can't be, it must be reemphasized. This is one instance where you literally created your own vehicle from scratch. Or very much, or very close to scratch.
We did, well, in a sense, I might clarify it from the design point of view.
Right.
We product planned our design in respect that we brainstormed as to what this car should look like and what it should not look like. And we brainstormed as to the kinds of designs that would be acceptable and would not be acceptable. And I do remember that I personally contributed many ideas and sketches for the Mustang, and along with the designers, as a directional indication from me as to where I thought the Mustang should go as far as theme. And I feel quite pleased that the directions that I helped guide on this car proved to be so successful. And I personally also feel very strongly about the front end concept for this car, which I helped nurture and develop along with the designers and the total design effort in the studio.
Well, it was a tremendous success.
It was a tremendous success and a lot of fun. It, It took a lot of time as far as our overtime and tremendous effort and highly concentrated effort in a very short period of time. But it paid off.
It certainly did. Mm-hmm. As a final postscript, what was Mr. Iacocca's reaction to your letter?
Well, it was interesting. When I wrote Lee this letter, he wasn't in the office, and I called a few days later, and his secretary said that no, he was out of town, that he would be in a few days, and sure that he'd be calling me or something to that effect. And mm-hmm. and sure enough, a couple days later, at 5:30 in the morning, the telephone rang at my bedside, and I wakened up with a jolt, and on the other end was Lee Iacocca. Mm-hmm. And I had talked with Lee, and I said, Lee, I felt that the excerpt, as I read it in the Newsweek, was not quite correct, that it should have given credit, if credit was to be mentioned, to many designers, but I said that would be difficult, mm-hmm. but I felt that possibly it should have read at least Joe Orris and his staff, and to, if need be, mention some other people in the mm-hmm. studio, because it was a total design effort in the Ford studio. It was my staff that put it together.
Yes,
he said, he said he felt terrible about it. And he said he couldn't do anything about it because the books had already been printed. But that he would give it some consideration for the second edition or thereafter. But at least I felt well enough about it. I called him. I had written him a letter, and I felt good that he'd given me a return response. I've always had a very good relationship with Lee. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed working with him. I thought he was a tremendous product man, mm-hmm. and he had a tremendous sense for what the product should look like, and a tremendous sense of the product for sales purposes. Mm-hmm. And he was a great person to realize that the marketplace needed, he sensed mm-hmm. that the marketplace needed a personalized sporty car, which wasn't in existence at that time. And the product planners and the engineers did put together, of course, some packages, and the design studios in the design building outside of the Ford area spent a lot of time and effort. But he had this sense that Ford Motor needed such a car, and of course I'm real pleased to have been part of it, and real pleased with the effort that went in it and the success of the effort and my association with all the people that worked on it with me.
Well, certainly Mr. Iacocca obviously valued your contribution over the years as well.
Well, I've always had a good relationship with Lee, and I had a very good rapport with Lee, and I think he's a tremendous product man.
Well, we think you're a tremendous design man.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orris.
This is Dave Crippen in Santa Barbara, California, and as a bonus or an extra added attraction to Joe Orris's interview, we have asked his wife, Betty Orris, to add to an added, give an added dimension to our history of design by detailing the early part of her career in the design field. And so we'll pick up the story as a young Betty Thatcher is about to enter the Cleveland School of Design to train as a designer.
We're supposed to start about the schooling first.
just sketch in the details.
Well, mm-hmm. Well, it was a 4-year course, mm-hmm. and my dad thought I ought to be a secretary because he was a CPA and he knew that secretaries could make a little bit of money. But I wasn't for that. I wanted to go to art school, so I went to Cleveland Institute of Art.
And you were then Betty Thatcher.
Thatcher, yes. Mm-hmm.
From
Elyria.
Elyria, Ohio.
Yes,
okay.
That's
good.
Near Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I took industrial design. It's a 4-year course.
A rather unusual curriculum for a lady in those days, was it not?
Well, there were other girls in the class.
Were there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And enjoyed it very much. And when about the time I graduated, the school had received a letter from Frank Spring in Detroit, Michigan.
And he was?
And he was head of design at the Hudson Motor Car Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the right idea. He thought that cars should at least appeal to women, because at that time, I guess most families only had one car, but he thought that the woman of the family would have a lot to say about which car was chosen because of the appearance,
mm-hmm.
never mind whether it
mm-hmm.
ran well or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted a female designer to consult and also do some designing. So he wrote the Cleveland School of Art, and they asked me to come to Detroit and be interviewed.
What year was this?
This was 1939.
Incredible. Mr. Spring was obviously a rather forward thinker in this, a progressive thinker.
I think so,
mm-hmm.
yes. And
however, may I ask you one question quickly? What was your career objective at the Cleveland School of Design? Or had you thought that out?
Oh, yes.
Point?
I wanted to design products, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was going to be a car designer.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyhow, I went for the interview. I had received a 5th-year scholarship, but I didn't think I'd take that. I
mm-hmm.
was going to go for a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I went for the interview and got the job, turned right around, went back to Elyria, and on Labor Day, my mother and I drove to Detroit, and the next day I went to Hudson Motor Car Company.
Now you're going a bit too fast. Let me ask you some questions about the interview. How did you, you had not met Mr. Spring.
No, no.
And how did the interview go? What did you discuss?
A long time ago. Anyhow,
what sticks in your mind as the salient points of that interview?
He wanted to find out if I was serious about design, for
mm-hmm.
one thing. I could tell that.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me questions about cars, but he didn't know I couldn't drive. And but you know, I had my ideas of good design, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And,
do you remember any details?
I really don't.
Uh-huh. Now, was he interested in you for your the input that you would be able to give to his developing concept of the then novel notion that there were female customers for automobiles, and that perhaps many decisions were influenced by the female half of the buying public.
Mm-hmm.
Did he feel that you would be helpful in what came to be the traditional role of a color and fabric consultant, and beyond that in terms of
yes.
actual design work?
Yes, I did work on color and fabric,
mm-hmm.
but I also worked on the exterior decoration. At the time, they weren't changing the body shape very much. I
uh-huh.
guess I couldn't
right.
afford it.
Uh-huh.
But I worked on what they called the side bonnet lights. There was a little triangular light at the front of the hood that would be on at night, of course, so the car would be instantly recognized as a Hudson, you know.
Oh, really?
Tonight. And that was the top of the line, and then the less expensive one had sort of a rectangular light, and this was all incorporated in the chrome trim that went the length of the car.
When you say light, you don't mean the conventional light, you mean a motif.
Yes, but there was a light behind it that
there
actually went on.
Ah. And where was this placed? You said the bonnet.
In the front of this, on the side of the hood.
Uh-huh.
At the front point.
It was illuminated.
Yes, and now the Thunderbird has something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It goes on at night, and especially when you turn the corner.
Was it a plastic or a...
Yes, it was a plastic.
A clear plastic?
No, it was white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like frosted.
Frosted plastic,
mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's fascinating.
And I worked on the interiors, too, and the interior hardware, the instrument panel with a concave radio grill.
Mm-hmm.
I have pictures of all this.
Uh-huh. All of this for the Hudson line.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Kibiger, Art Kibiger, was just under Frank Spring.
Can you spell that?
K-I-B-I-G-E-R,
okay.
Art Kibiger. And I really saw more of him than I did of Mr. Spring.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a place in front of the window in his office with the drawing board and everything. I wasn't allowed in the studio at first.
It was a male preserve.
Yeah.
Well, at least initially.
He said he thought that I shouldn't be exposed to their language.
You think also he thought you might prove a distraction to them?
Oh, I don't think so.
Obviously a handsome man.
But eventually I did go in the studio after a while. After all, designers talk among themselves and talk over the development of whatever
the
they're working on. Sure.
The creative interaction of ideas and interchange, of course, is the lifeblood, I suspect, of the
They must have
profession.
Cleaned up their act because I didn't notice any bad language.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed working with them.
How long were you there?
About 2 years.
2 years. Anything else that you think would be helpful?
Tell
us about your sojourn.
Well, there are people that were in the design.
Yes, who were your colleagues there?
Well, Jake Aldrich. And
what was his function?
Well, these were all designers.
I see.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
They weren't assigned specific portions of the car's anatomy or specific.
No, well, I suppose from time to time they were given assignments.
Mm-hmm. I see. But it was generally a design team, an overall design team.
That's right.
Who else?
And Nils Thornquist. And I don't know if he's still designing or not. Herb Todd, Bob Cotto, Bob Thomas, Bob Fitzpatrick, and Dick Khalil.
Now, three of them later turned up in your unit.
That's right.
At Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Interesting coincidence. That was Mr. Khalil, Mr. Cotto, and Mr. Thomas, I believe. Who did you think, maybe this is not a fair question, was the effort that you, the final product that you produced, the Hudson of... Was it the 1940 Hudson you were working on?
Probably 41.
41, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Were you happy with what finally resulted?
Well, you know, the body wasn't such an attractive thing. And all through school, we were thinking in the future, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it was a little disappointing.
Was it? Mm-hmm. In what way?
Well, we all wanted to make the body more modern, more streamlined.
And what was holding you back?
Oh, budget.
Budget,
mm-hmm.
Management,
mm-hmm.
The engineering packagers, I suspect, had
yeah, sure, they
pulled in the reins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was, while it was a fascinating experience for you, and you valued it, the end result was a bit disappointing because of budget constraints.
Yeah, right.
Is there anything, a final comment you'd like to make about the fact that you were apparently, as we've been able to ascertain, probably the first female hired to do design work in the automobile industry?
Well,
1939.
A full-time employee, yes. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Mm-hmm. This has not been generally recognized, as far as I know, in print.
No.
Do you feel that distinction? have you thought much about that particular
Not unless somebody mentions it to me. I haven't. No.
Well, I think as nearly as we can ascertain that you were perhaps the first full-time female doing actual design work in the automobile industry.
Well, if you hear somebody else, you let me know.
Well, is there anything else that you think, you both think that should be recorded at this point?
You might say that something in fact how we decided finally that one of us had
Yes. Well, since Joe was with GM at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I was with Hudson Motor, we were sort of competing. We thought that before somebody really found this out, one of us better quit, and of course I was the one.
It was you. Today you might have made a different decision, perhaps.
Well, I don't think it would matter today.
Wouldn't matter today. No, those old bugaboos about having